Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome to another episode of our continuing series, Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories. This program on Radio Sai brings to you every week precious recollections and reflections of former students of Bhagwan Baba's educational institutes, the Sri Satya Sai University and the Sri Satya Sai Higher Secondary School. Dear listeners, these episodes are rich and enlightening as they are reminiscences of moments spent in the divine company of one who is not only the Chancellor of Sri Satya Sai University, Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba, but also the soul force who shapes the character of these students and creates enlightened individuals out of enthusiastic youngsters. And you will get a glimpse of how this actually happens when you listen to today's conversation with Mr. Vivek Naidu. Vivek joined the Vrindavan campus of Sri Satya Sai University in the year 1995 for his bachelor's in commerce. And later on, he moved to the Prashanthi Nilayam campus of the same university to pursue his master's in financial management. After he completed this post-graduation degree in 2001, Vivek stepped into the corporate world and served in Citibank till November 2009. Currently, he is the Senior Vice President, Private Banking of Barclays Bank based in Chennai, India. So, over now to the conversation with Mr. Vivek Naidu. Sairam brother Vivek Naidu, and welcome to this program, Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories.
Sairam Prushti, my pleasure to be here.
So basically we are here to know about your precious moments in Bhagwan's University. You graduated in the year 2000, is that right?
I graduated in 2001, MBA 2000, BCom 1998 and MBA 2001.
And you did your management?
Yeah, I did BCom honors and postgraduate in Masters in Finance.
We would surely like to hear more about your experience in the corporate world, especially in the banking sector. But before that, let's get back to your initial days in the university. How did you happen to become a Sai student? Did you know of Bhagwan when you joined the college?
I did know of Bhagwan before I joined the college because I was born into Swami's fraternity and grew up believing he was God. So to that extent, it was not too much of a surprise. But my past was culturally very different from the environment that we had in college. My mother attended the first summer course that Swami hosted in 1972 or 73. My grandmother was a devotee since she was, I think, 20, 22 years old. My grand aunt worked in Swami's hospital. She was a doctor and she was a spinster.
The general hospital here?
The general hospital in Puttaparthi. It's before the super came up. So it goes back a long way. My grandfather is an extremely ardent devotee of Swami. He wouldn't do anything unless Swami approved of it. When my mother was to be married, he came to Puttaparthi with four horoscopes. Oh. And my dad's was the least preferred. He put that fourth in order and then Swami came for darshan. And he asked Swami, I have to get my daughter married and please choose. So Swami picked out my father's, which was the least preferred. And my grandfather said, probably God's making a mistake. So Swami took a few steps and then Swami walked back and said to him in Telugu, Tappakunda, get her, which means without fail, get her married to this boy. Swami's words are not to be, instructions are not to be disobeyed. So they got married. I think 2 years after they were married, they had me for a son. And many years later, after I joined and came to Vrindavan, 95, 96, Swami gave me an opportunity to speak in Vrindavan.
Oh.
And
in the Thrai sessions?
Yeah, inside the Thrai sessions, Swami asked me to speak.
Before we move on, I think we must tell our listeners that Trai sessions are sessions inside Swami's residence in the Trai Vrindavan. After the evening bhajans, where Swami spends maybe an hour or two with the boys.
Yeah.
At least he used to do
yeah.
for many years. Now, right. of course, the frequency has reduced. So go on.
I went to a Ivy League school in my hometown in Ooty. It was being run by a British missionary. And the way of life there was essentially very Western. So when I came and spoke in front of Swami, my language hadn't changed. I was full of my mom, my dad. And Swami enjoyed it immensely. And I narrated the story of how Swami chose my father's horoscope. And I told Swami, I'm born as your choice. And so I'm your child. And Swami was incredibly happy. And he was very happy that day. He was very happy with me because I said that. And after the session was over, a lot of people came and corrected me saying, please watch your language and all that. I'm like, Swami is enjoying it, so I don't need to change.
And you're just coming from your heart. So.
It's coming from my heart. So the all my... I think you're supposed to be saying my mother, my father, but I was mom, dad. And that's the greatest thing with Swami, right? If it comes from the heart, there are no barriers in terms of respect needs to be there, but there's no barriers in terms of cultural differences. But when I did join the institute on my first day of joining, I was warned before, other than my grandmother who lived in Puttaparthi, nobody believed that I would actually survive Swami's college because everybody knew the environment was very restrictive. The only thing that they didn't know that it is restrictive for a good reason. So the first day that I came and joined for the summer course, I walked into the hostel, and when you come from an Ivy League school, your expectation is you'll have your exclusive room and you'll have comfortable beds and you probably have a music system and everything. I walked in, and I think we continued to have the dormitory system. We were expected to sleep on the floor. I had no bedding with me when I came in. It was lunchtime, so I had to go for lunch. So I walked in, and my entire life, I'm used to food being served on the table. But in our system, you've got to have your own cutlery, and you've got to line up, and you've got to take food. You have to sit on the floor and eat. And for me, that's just unacceptable back then. Somebody was very kind enough. They realized that, you know, here's fish out of the water. So they gave me their own. They had just finished food, so they gave me their cutlery and I had food. I had struggled the first meal. By then, my parents had left me and they had gone back. We were to get ready for spending the evening, and I had no bedding. And I was expected to sleep on the floor.
Hmm.
I don't remember how, but I think I got through that. The next day, we had to get ready for darshan, and I was expected to shave off my mustache.
Oh.
Which I think is, you got to keep it if you're a young man in the outer world.
So everything was kind of a small shock.
Yeah, everything was a shock. And it was a big deal back then. You know, I was like, what? Why do I have to do this?
Yeah.
Do I have to do this?
So
why do I have to
revolting
do
to everything?
Revolting, it went farther than that. I decided to pack my bags and leave.
Oh my God.
I said, this place is not for me.
Like, this was like after one day or after a few days?
After one day, because... It was too much because I didn't believe it's going to change, right? So it's not like you're going to need to stay for a couple of days and they're going to allow you to do the stuff that you want to do. So this is not going to change. I'm going to quit. I called my friend. He actually chose not to come to Swami's Institute because he knew this is the way life is going to be. And strange piece of advice I got from him. He said, you've just gone there. Just try it out for a week. Try it out for a month. And if you still can't do it, you can come back. But quitting in one day is, you have nothing to lose by staying for 1 week, right?
You're making the decision in haste.
Yeah. Then it so happened that we had our sessions in the morning. For some odd reason, there was an inaugural session. I saw Swami from a distance and everything. But that evening, we were invited to sit on the lawns inside Trai Vrindavan. Trai is an incredibly beautiful place. It's got a beautiful building, beautiful ornate dark door. We were sitting on both the sides where the lawns were there. I was at a considerable distance. Magically, the doors opened and Swami was standing behind it. And I've never seen anything like that in my life till today. That day, when Swami came, stepped out, I lost all the reasoning that I had in my head. Nobody had appealed to my heart as much as Swami, who just stood at a distance in that day.
Just the darshan.
Just the darshan. It's just his aura standing there, not a crease on his robe, perfect posture. Typically, the way he stands, both his hands joined in front of him. and the atmosphere is extremely peaceful. There was pin drop silence. There was a garden behind us where they had ducks and deers. Even they didn't make any noise. And Swami just stood there it was an afternoon, I think it was a Sunday afternoon. I had never seen anything like that in my life before. And something changed in me that day. That day, that one darshan that I saw Swami. And I said, I'm not leaving this place. It's a calling of the heart. Swami connected with me on that day. And I haven't lost the connection since. Yes. I don't feel the need to write letters to him. I would prefer to sit in front of him and talk my heart out. But given how busy he is, I don't feel the need to come and physically communicate with him. The connection that he made to my heart on this day, it's been 15 years now. That connection hasn't gone. Every day I wake up in the morning, the same connection is still there. So it's that amazing day completely changed my life. And I'm thankful that Swami did whatever he did for me.
As days went by, Swami would have blessed you with many more opportunities in your student days.
Because a lot of people believed that I would not survive this place, I took to it with a lot of zeal and I said, I prove half of you wrong because I am going to survive here, right? But I thoroughly enjoyed what I did. The background that I came from, everything is mutually exclusive, you know. Everybody just looked out for himself or herself. You were friends and still people wouldn't look out for you. But that is something which is profoundly different in Swami's institutions, right? Somebody is always eager to look out for you.
It's an atmosphere of caring.
It's an atmosphere that people care for you when they don't have to, when they get nothing in return. They care for you because Swami cares for you. Simple gesture, somebody gave me a pillow and a bedsheet to spend the night. Somebody gave their cutlery to eat. And those are things that I never experienced before. You had to look out for yourself, and if you didn't get it, you had to live without it. But that's what is profoundly different in Swami's atmosphere, right? Without you knowing, everybody's called brother or sister for that matter. I never experienced that. It was very unique.
So you started liking that?
I started valuing it a lot. I just took to it. I said, I have nothing to lose. And I was just a completely different person. Born again, if you may. I thoroughly enjoyed being in this collective. I felt I belonged here.
So what are your best moments in Vrindavan? Because Vrindavan is such a beautiful place. There are plenty of things that happen all around the year. And when Swami is there, it's absolutely breathtaking. You have 3 sessions plus... Vrindavan is always busy with so many extracurricular activities.
Vrindavan was a turbulent period for me in my personal life.
Because you were adjusting to the new environment?
Adjusting was, I was done with it. After I had Swami's darshan, and I'm the kind of person who just needs to make up his mind. And once I make up my mind, things don't change. So not from an institution point of view, not from Swami's point of view, but from my personal life point of view, from my family and so on and so forth. It was an incredibly difficult period in my in family life. Things were falling apart back home. Somehow I feel that my being at Swami's lotus feet is what held my family together. There were times when my father fell ill and I was extremely concerned. And I told Swami, Swami, father needs operation. Swami said, sickness is like passing clouds. If you have a body, they'll come. No operation required. Don't worry. And then when my dad went later, he didn't require the operation. I started realizing that there's just somebody who will always look out for you. And not just for you, he'll look out for your whole family and the people who matter to you and so on and so forth. Fortunately, I learned my first alphabet from Swami, and that was in 1982. Back then, you were allowed to sit with a slate and a piece of chalk, and Swami would come around, and I eagerly put my slate forward, and Swami took my slate, and I learned my first alphabet from him. 1982. Then I came back in 1995, so 13 years after that, and I had no connection with Swami in the intermediate period. But much later, I would discover that there were many instances that Swami saved me from a lot of pitfalls, right?
He was always there.
He was always there.
You didn't know, probably.
I didn't know, yeah. But I did kind of figure out much later, if I would recount those pitfalls as a teenager in a very westernized school, a lot of things that I got saved from was not because I kind of figured that they were wrong things to do. It's because Swami's hand was always there in protecting me and taking me away from things that I should not be indulging into.
So from Vrindavan, you moved to Parthi for your management?
Strange thing, I was so involved in being with Swami, you know, I just really never wanted to go away. And you really had to appear for an entrance exam for your MBA, and there was no guarantee that you'll get in, right? I gave Ganesha a hard time back then.
Okay.
A lot of us believe that the Ganesha, as soon as we enter Mandir, he's very kind. So I gave him a hard time and I made him solely responsible for my getting into MBA. And I said, I'll be very cross with you if I didn't get my MBA, because I just couldn't stand going away from Swami, because the period of my 3 years, it was heaven and hell. Life outside was tough, but it was heaven because I was in Vrindavan. So the value that Vrindavan has added to my life, I could write a book, perhaps I could write a couple of volumes of books of how it actually held my family together, how it changed me as a person, and I became close to Swami. I got into MBA, and then one day Swami said, you have to go home. I mean, that's all he said. And our admissions back then were conditional, right? Our admissions were depending on what your BCom results were. And
yes,
your MBA course started before your BCom results actually came out.
Right.
And then when my result came, I saw that I had failed in my company law. And that is one of my strongest courses. And I was all O's throughout the course, you know. But in my final course, I had failed that subject. So extremely dejected, I went back home.
So even though you had got the MBA seat?
I had got the MBA seat. And subsequently, I had to go home.
Mm.
One, because Swami asked me to. Another, because I had failed the course, right? I had to reappear. When I went back home, I discovered that I was incredibly required at home. My presence at home at that point in time would change the life of my parents forever. My physically being there protected my parents from a lot of forces that was working around them. They were getting into a couple of projects, which eventually landed us in court. And I was 21 years old back then, and I represented the family at the Madras High Court. We had clearly violated the law in putting up a couple of buildings. We faced the prospect of losing an incredible amount of money and respect, because there was no way the court was going to rule in our favor. People who advised my father advised him wrongly, and doom was just around the corner. Our case number was 18, and there was a similar violation case number 17, and the judge had turned down any petition for stay. When our case came up, somebody came and said the public pleader who was working on behalf of the government was wanted in another court. And he got out of the court, and there was nobody to argue against our case.
Oh.
And our case was put forth, and we got a stay. Nobody else could have done it. Swami saved us back then, and he showed us that doing something wrong can actually taught us a lot of lessons as a family. Swami has always been very, very particular about being truthful and law-abiding and everything, and that was a big lesson. He saved us, he saved the family, and then my father offered me to go to some other college to do my MBA, and I said, I'm going to this college, I'm not going anywhere else. I said, how many ever years it takes to wait, I'll go to only Swami's college to do my MBA, and I'll not go anywhere else. So I gave Ganesha a hard time again. Then I eventually got into MBA the next year. Beautiful years. Ours is a system where, like I said before, where everybody looks after everybody else, right? The hostel.
I always remember the saying in the hostel, a home is a place where each one lives for the other and all live for God. That's how the hostel is.
Our hostel doesn't have organized workforce. It's not like we have electricians and plumbers and sweepers and cleaners and everything, right? So the boys do everything. They run the hostel. A lot of our people who our professors were ex-students who decided to spend the rest of their lives devoted to Swami, teaching in the college by day and running the hostel after college hours. A very unique concept where it teaches you self-sufficiency, right? It shows you the value of labor. It teaches you that no job is too small to do. So I was part of the maintenance department. We had dramas for which we made our own sets. We had sports meet for which we also made our own arrangements. We never relied on anybody outside. Whatever it is, we figured out. And I think that's an incredible strength. That's an incredible quality that Swami installed in you, right? Because subsequently, when you go out into the world, you figure out that more than the immense intellectual capital you may bring, your attitude is extremely important. And what the hostel essentially teaches you is that as long as you figure it out by yourself, you can get the job done. And that's what differentiates a lot of us from people who go to other institutions which are not inclined as ours. I have seen people of great intellectual talent falter when it comes to very, very critical, extremely emotionally demanding, and if it were intellectually demanding, they kind of figured it out. But it was demanding in any other way in terms of having to sacrifice something or what to sacrifice or who to sacrifice. If it was emotionally demanding in any way, they faltered. But in my life, I eventually ended up managing a portfolio of $200 million. I had 10, 15 people reporting to me. And this chaos in the financial world within the country as well, but I'm going to go just talk for myself and I'm not going to talk about everybody else. When trouble hit our shores, I had clients who were completely dependent on the export market.
We are talking about the Wall Street collapse.
Yeah, the global recession as it were. I had clients whose sales were dropping 70%. Usually, when the world shakes in terms of commerce and economics, as long as the financial system is intact, you can sail through that. But this is one of the unique situations where the life blood system, the heart and the nervous system, as it were shaking up. So you've got to choose. Are you going to save yourself as a bank or are you going to save the clients? That's a difficult choice to make. And the obvious choice to make is you save yourself first, right? But I can tell you in the last 1 year, I've never allowed any of my clients to fail. Under immense pressure, I work for a multinational and the survival of the multinational was in question. And the pressures were, we don't care what happens, bring the money back. And we said, sorry, we can't do that. Suddenly, at one point in time, your view is that the automotive industry is the industry and that's what you should lend to. And suddenly you turn around and say, that's the industry you should not be lending to. You cannot subject your clients to that kind of change in stance, right? You cannot put their lives because one client will have 500 families which are dependent on them.
Right.
You just can't pull a plug in self-interest because I need to pull the plug on some client and henceforth I can keep my job. I didn't want to do that. I never allowed any of my clients to
fail. You were very clear with that.
Very, very clear. It's because again, in the hostel, you were taught to care about the last person in the line, right?
Right.
Irrespective of my position in a bank, handling a large portfolio, having a huge title, perceived to be extremely educated, I was worried about the last guy in the production line of my client. If I pulled out of my client and asked for my money back, and there's certainly that my client would have to shut down, and somebody's going to go out of work, and that's just not tolerable for us. Swami doesn't teach us this. You got to worry about the guy who's last in the line. The problem Absolutely. With the world today is that you worry about the first person in the line, right? Mm. And I'm sure they can take care of themselves. Mm. The people that we should be worried about are the people who stand last in the line. And that is what the life in Satya Sai Institutes and the hostel teaches you to do. That's, I never pull the plug on any one of my clients.
That's the definition that Swami gives of joy.
Yeah.
Jesus first, others next, you last.
Yeah. And 1 year later, I never pull the plug on my client. But there are pressures, right? At the end of the day, if somebody's given me a job, I got to deliver. So I went about getting finance for my clients from other banks. I went, sat down and explained to them.
So you found out alternate ways to help them.
Yeah, we found alternate ways to help them. We explained to other banks. We have credibility in the market, right?
Mm.
So we explained to other banks that we are pulling out not because the client is bad. They are extremely genuinely good people. You can't work with people for 5 years and at the end of the 5 years decide they are bad people, right?
Mm.
It's just that you run out of patience. So we explained to other banks that, you know, the situation is bad and we are in this unique position where our situation is also bad.
Right.
It took a long time. In some cases, it took us a whole year to find alternative finance. And that 1 year, if there was one person who gave you the strength in believing what you're doing at Swami, right? At the end of the day, you're human.
Mm.
And you end up asking yourself, am I doing the right thing?
I think.
In the last 1 year, in rupee terms, I've recovered 100 crores. And in dollar terms, that's close to $25 million. And $25 million is a lot of money just from one location, right? And and around the country, it's a multiple of that. But it's extremely satisfying at the end of the year that you really haven't hurt anybody's life. You haven't put other people to hardship. As it is, greed has put a lot of people to hardship, right? And the last thing that you should be doing, at least because of the fraternity you belong to, your Swami's teachings are something that you want to even practice in your own natural way. The Swami says, help ever and hurt never. And I genuinely would not hurt anybody just because of my work. And I would always want to help. And we sailed through the year. And like I said, if there's one person, one force which made me believe what I'm doing is right, it was Swami. And a lot of people in the bank I work for told me that I took exceptional risk. They said, why would you want to take so much on your head? What will happen if something went wrong? I told them, you won't understand that first of all, nothing will go wrong. And even if it did, there is somebody who will figure it out. and you people won't
understand.
We have
that self-confidence. Once you build that relationship with Swami,
yeah,
you have that self-confidence.
Yeah, because every time we come here during our most troubled times, He never fails to notice that you've come. It can be a hall filled with thousands of people, but if you come for His help and say, Swami, I'm in trouble, He will never, ever fail you. All that He needs to do is look in your eyes, and then you can go back and say, yeah, life will be okay and we'll get past this. So life here teaches you a lot of things, right? As long as you care for the person who's last in the line, somebody is going to care for you. So it's just a circle. So as long as we just start caring for each other in a very real way, I think the world will be a much better place. And I don't think I could have got this anywhere else.
Many times when the boys are in the hostel, when they go through the routine in the hostel, the kind of discipline that is there in the hostel, the kind of different self-reliance activities or other activities in the hostel, how it actually will shape you later in life. Swami has actually laid down the entire routine in the hostel.
Yeah.
And listening from you, you have like 9 years after you have graduated, and now you see the big picture. Everything that Swami does has so much purpose in it. And,
yeah,
and
yeah,
this model of educational institution that Swami has set up is so different.
Yeah, but you've got to see, right, Swami is kind of, as far as His own institutions are concerned, He's set the ball in motion, and I think His own students will have a profound influence on the world. The world is rapidly changing. In one way, I think the Sai way of life is what is going to save the world. The problem of the financial world today is greed, right?
Yes.
There was recently a conference, Swami spoke about a character from the Mahabharata, and he said he was a good king, but he used to gamble. And captains of banking industry were there, right?
Yes.
And I think a lot of them understood what Swami said.
He started the discourse with that.
Yeah, he started the discourse with that. And I think a lot of people understood what Swami said when they said, maybe you're good people, but the problem is you guys gamble, you know.
Mm.
And that's what is the problem in the financial world today, right? It's just too much gambling going on. I believe a lot of our students, a lot of our alumni are going to take very, very senior roles. And it will redefine the world. It's just, you just have to wait to see that happen.
Absolutely. One only feels more encouraged when one listens to people like you. And it was really enlightening talking to you. Actually, we would like to speak to you once again, or maybe many more times. You said you have volumes to write about your Vrindavan days, and I'm sure you'll have plenty to say about your days in Prashanthi Nilayam too. But for today, we will close and probably meet some other time.
Yeah.
You're always welcome to come to the Radio Sai Studio.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been my pleasure. Thank you very much.
Dear listeners, you just heard excerpts of a conversation with Mr. Vivek Naidu, an alumnus of the Sri Satya Sai University, Prashanthi Nilayam. This was recorded in November 2009 in the Radio Sai Studios in Prashanthi Nilayam and is another episode of our series Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories, offering you reflections of former students of Bhagwan Baba's educational institutes. If you would like to download this program, you can do so from our website link radiosai.org/sai-students, where Sai Students is one word. We also look forward to your feedback and suggestions to this program. So please send in your mails to listener@radiosai.org. Thank you so much for joining us today, and please stay tuned for more such reflections in this segment entitled Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories. Same time, same day, next week. Till then, Sai Ram from Prashanthi Nilayam.